This is Edwin O'Shea. This is a reading guide. This is a guide to reading, section 1.1 for Calculus 1, Math 235. So let's start off this chapter. It's entitled An Intuitive Introduction to Limits. 1.2 will be a more careful introduction. But for now, we're really just going to emphasize the intuition. Let me start off by maybe, you know, forgive me this kind of funny, you know, anecdotal way, you know, of saying it. Maybe humorous. I shouldn't flatter myself by calling myself funny. Maybe I should say slightly humorous way of saying it. But I think, you know, nonetheless, you know, fairly relevant. I want you to think of a limit, you know, in the following way. So let's suppose that you wanted to ask somebody out, right? So you want to ask somebody out. So one option is that you could just ask them out, you know, directly. And there's certainly, you know, nothing, you know, wrong with that option. But, you know, it might take us a few years yet to figure that out. So what do you do instead? Do you know what? Let's suppose you're in high school. Because right now, if you like somebody, you should just ask them out, right? Get to know them better and ask them out. But anyway, that has nothing got to do with calculus, right? But let's go back to high school, and if you wanted to say if you wanted to ask somebody out, you know, on a date, well, you normally wouldn't ask them out just directly, but what you would do is that you would try and get information about whether the person would be likely to go out with you or not. So I guess one person that you could ask is that you could ask your high school math teacher if you think that the person, you know, the person of your interests would go out with you. But the information there you're going to get is pretty bad, right? The high school math teacher is going to say, well, you know, I don't know. We never talk about that kind of stuff. And besides, I'm not that close to the person. Now, emphasis there is on the word close. So you'd like for your information to get better. So maybe you would ask somebody who takes classes with that person. So you know somebody who takes classes with the person that you're interested in. And they say, oh yeah, well, I take classes with them. I know them reasonably well, but not all that well. What they're likely to say, you know, I know that such and such is friends with them. Why don't you ask such and such? Your information then is going to be better, right? So you ask such and such and such and says, oh, I do know that they're not seeing anyone at the moment, but, you know, I don't know them well enough to know whether they like you or not. And then such and such says, you know, maybe you should ask someone who's closer to them than I am. Maybe you should ask, you know, there's their good friend over there. So you go over and you ask their good friend. You're like, oh, you know, could you tell me if, you know, if the person I'm interested in, do you think they'd go out with me? And then, you know, the good friend says, you know, they're definitely not going out with somebody. I've heard them talk about you one or two times, but they've never kind of revealed how they feel about you. So I'm not sure. And then the good friend says, you know who their best friend is? This person. This person is their best friend, as close as you can get. So then you go and ask the best. Then you go and ask the best friend, and your information then is like becomes like really, really good. Now that seems like this kind of long story, right? But the point is that sometimes it's kind of hard to figure out kind of what's happening exactly at a given point. So instead, what you do is that you say, "Well, what do things look like close to that point?" So in our case, it's not so much that we're going to have, you know, a question of whether a person will go out with us or not, but we're going to have a function. We try to plug in a point of interest into that function, but, you know, something, you know, it's hard to put our finger on what's happening, right? Sometimes we might get something like 0/0, where the function is just not kind of, you know, not defined in a direct way. So instead, what you could say is, well, how does the function behave close to it? How does the function behave close to it? Maybe that would be good enough information for me. So you kind of ask for, well, what do the points close to the point I'm interested in? How does the function behave with those points that are close to? the point that I'm interested in. And that's effectively what a limit is. It's a question going on to definition 1.1. Look at definition A. It's saying the value of a function f of x. You say that this approaches L or gets closer and closer to some constant L. As x, as the input gets closer and closer to c, c is your point of interest. Then we say the limit of f of x, in other words, the behavior of f of x. As x is close to c, we say the behavior is very close to L. That's effectively what we're saying when we're saying a limit. Now, looking at definition 1.1, I've kind of jumped a few pages there. Let's go back a few pages there to like the, let's say that the example there for the limit of functions, right? You could see you have this graph. It's f of x equal to x plus 1 and g of x equal to x squared minus 1 over x minus 1, right? Now, those two look like the same function. And I know you want to do some cancellation here. But one of the purposes of limits is to do that cancellation carefully. Look at the graph for g of x. Note it says that g of 1 is undefined, which it is, because if you put 1 into the function g of 1, you get 1 minus 1 divided by 1 minus 1. That's 0 over 0. But look at the behavior of the function. Look at the height of the function. As your x value gets closer and closer to 1, the height of the function gets closer and closer to 2 from both sides. So we say the limit, note the notation, the limit of g of x as x approaches 1 is 2. But that g of 1 is undefined. Note that we're distinguishing between g of 1 and f of 1, although I know you just want to cancel things out there, right? But we don't have the mechanism yet to cancel things out. Now, going back to definition 1.1, we also have limits at infinity, namely asking about the behavior of a function as x gets larger and larger. That should look familiar. Remember, that's what a horizontal asymptote looks like. We have an infinite limit, which is just like what a vertical asymptote looks like. And we have an infinite limit at infinity, right? Which is when we say, look, as the input gets larger and larger, the function also gets larger and larger. And that's just very informally. Notice that we also have definition 1.2. And all definition 1.2 is saying with the left-hand limit and the right-hand limit is that you're asking the exact same question. What happens to the function as x approaches c? But for the left-hand limit, we say, as we get closer and closer to c from the left-hand side of c. And the right-hand limit is as we get closer and closer to c from the right-hand side of c. No, note the notation, limit of f of x as x is going to c, and then you have this notation c minus, don't you? That means getting closer and closer to c from the left, and c plus is for c to the right. And note you have a figure. Soon afterwards, you have a function. Right after definition 1.2, you have a nice graph. Note that the function coming from the right is defined, but coming from the left, it's not defined. We're going to say the limit exists if the limit coming from the left exists and the limit from the right exists. And if those two limits match up, then we're going to say a limit exists. Note that next we have definition 1.3, vertical asymptotes. We have our first careful definition of a vertical asymptote. Notice that. Next, horizontal asymptote. We have finally a careful definition of horizontal asymptote, and both of those are in terms of limits. Look at the examples very carefully. Example 1 is very nice. Example 2 is also very nice. Different types of limit behaviors. Notice that in example 2, f of x, notice that you have the limit of f of x as x approaches negative 2 exists, even though that limit does not match up with the function value. Notice that f of minus 2 is defined, it's equal to 1, but that the limit of f of x as x gets closer to negative 2, note that that limit is equal to minus 1. So note that this is a really important opportunity to notice that the definition of a limit as x approaches c has nothing got to do with the actual value of the function at c. That's a very, very unusual feature. But you could see that here from this example of f of x. Again, I'll repeat that the limit of a function, f of x as x approaches c, whether that limit exists or not is completely independent of whether the function can be evaluated at that c or not. Really important. Example 3 is a very unusual example where the limit does not exist. Example 4 is also really nice. It's kind of like, you know, a precursor to what will come towards the end of the semester for computing areas. Very beautiful. And then we have the exercises, of course. Let me maybe point out some examples with the exercises. Note that an exercise, can you see it here in exercises 31 to 34? It'll be very helpful again to look back on example 2. That example we referred to there earlier. What else would we like to talk about? Let's see. What else would be especially worth mentioning? Yeah. I think that's, yeah. Oh, let me mention exercises 63 through 66 as well, right? It will help to draw a nice picture with these functions. And recall again, you know, of the utmost importance is that a limit exists if its left hand and its right hand limit both exist and if they're both the same. And again, whether a limit exists at a point or not is independent of the actual function value at that point. Okay, I'll stop at that. Enjoy the reading. I look forward to seeing you in class. Okay.